Welcome to Mickey and
the Mouse.
Hey everybody, it's Mel here and...
Yo, it's John.
Welcome back to Mickey and...
the Mouse.
Episode 8.
Figured 8.
That's cute. I like that. Aw. We want to thank you guys, as always, for your continued support. We really, really appreciate it.
All 200 of you.
All 200 on our on Instagram. Insta. Yeah, that doesn't count, like, you know, people
mom
listening.
And dad.
Yeah, mom and... thanks, mom and dad. No, we really appreciate you guys. We know that sounds so small to some, but to us, it means so much that 200 people care enough to follow us. So thank you guys so, so much. With that being said, this week is going to be a little different. We did just have Easter weekend. I'm not feeling too great, to be quite honest. I'm quite poorly right now, unfortunately.
So we're going to give you another Patreon episode that we did.
Yeah.
It was our first episode we ever did.
Yeah.
And it's about Emperor's New Groove and the behind the scenes, let's just say, not so Mickey magical.
Not so Mickey magical. Definitely more that mouse aspect we like to talk about sometimes. I think this totally reflects that.
I was really proud of this episode when we made it.
Yeah, no, it was our first one, so it will sound a little different, but I think it really captures that magic of what really got us going and starting, and you'll hear it. You'll hear it and understand, but yeah, it's crazy. And we totally encourage you to go watch this documentary as well. You'll hear all about what it's called, what happened, etc. when you listen. So with that,
enjoy.
Enjoy the episode, you guys. We recently learned, it was actually John found this, there is a documentary called Sweatbox.
Yes.
Or The Sweatbox. Which was made by Sting's wife, which is crazy to me. Her name is Trudy Styler. Give credit where credit is due. She did a whole documentary about The Emperor's New Groove and what it was and what it came to be. And guys, this documentary is basically non-existent in the public eye. Disney has tried to erase it from existence. But just like the Star Wars Holiday Special, it prevails.
In the lowest possible
in the lowest
quality.
Possible quality you could find.
But this even has the time code.
This has the time code. It's a home film. It is literally a home film. So John, being the wonderful husband he is, downloaded every single part off of YouTube, compiled it into one big film for me, and we just sat and watched it tonight.
There's a part of me that wants to say, hey, so it's the movie before The Emperor's New Groove,
yeah,
and the chaos that went into creating this. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the elevator pitch. Now go and find this low-quality thing
on
YouTube.
It is on YouTube. It is on YouTube.
And we'll get back, and you can come back to this episode, and then we can hear our thoughts on it.
Maybe I'll put a link in this description. So if you guys want to go watch this for yourself, we do warn you, it's very low quality. You're not going to see crisp images, but oh man, is it interesting.
The audio quality is great.
Audio quality is perfect. So I will try to find a link for you if you want to go watch for yourself. But with that in mind, I'm about to go into the overview of what this is. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to be spoiled, click off for now, come back later. So this was an IMDb review about the documentary.
In 2002.
They wrote, "While many know The Emperor's New Groove is a cult classic in the Disney lineup, it was originally a completely different film called Kingdom of the Sun." And then it was also Kingdom in the Sun.
It was a major change.
Major change. Almost all evidence was documented by singer Sting and his wife Trudy Styler in The Sweatbox. In the mid-1990s, Disney had contacted Sting to write songs for An Incan Prince and the Pauper Story. That is right, people. This was supposed to be a Prince and the Pauper story.
Not Emperor's New Clothes.
Not Emperor's New... No, that's a whole different story.
But no, but hence New Groove.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Get out of here. That's the first time you've realized... What? Whoa, my mind just blew.
He's a llama!
Wait, you didn't realize that that was the pun of the title? Whoa, no, totally different story.
I'm a moron.
Wow.
I'm going to cut this out.
No. We are keeping this. We are keeping this moment.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh.
Right.
Oh, I'm so stupid.
This is Sting. This is staying in the vault.
I'm crying. I'm so dumb. Oh my god, guys! Oh god, I'm so stupid. Okay. You love me anyway.
That wasn't even a question. But no, I wish that you could see a video version, because it was the ultimate, like, eye-awakening flashbulb realization that, wait, there's a reason why this movie has this title. It's not just about grooving.
Oh my god. Okay.
All right. We're going to go back to the back to the analysis now.
Okay.
I mean, I will joke about this at least two or three more times throughout this now.
Oh, God, and now everyone else is going to hear it, too. He won't let me cut this out. This is going to be... Okay, so...
No way are we cutting this.
Oh, my God. Okay, so... It was the Ink and Prince and the Pauper story.
What did it change into?
The Emperor's New Clothes. I knew this.
Totally. No doubt.
So... The original story, basically throughout the documentary, the key thing styler and co-director John Paul Davidson focused on is how Sting and the animation crew are affected by the drastic changes to the film brought on by the Disney executives, including former president Thomas Schumacher. Now, fun fact for people who love Disney theater, Thomas Schumacher later became the head of the Disney theatrical division. He just retired recently, actually. So the film's title derives itself from the Disney Animation screening rooms, famous for their lack of air conditioning, causing the animators to sweat while their work got critiqued. While the documentary might lead a bit more into Sting than the actual production process of The Kingdom to Emperor, it's nonetheless emphasizing how much of a task it was for the Disney crew just to please the executives in the short and long run. It was grueling.
Yeah.
Watching these people... labor so hard for something that never saw the light of day.
And they do make a point to say, like, even though that there are often bumps in the process of making something from early conception to end product, they're like, this is the biggest, at least in that era of Disney. I mean, I'm sure Black Cauldron changed a lot, but that was...
That's something that we'll never see anything else.
Exactly. We're never going to see a documentary of Black Cauldron.
No. Well, Sting also wasn't involved in Black Cauldron. So the only reason this was a thing was because of Sting and his wife. And I feel like that needs to be shouted out really hard.
It was contractual.
Contractually obligated. He said, I will do this if my wife can come in and
make the documentary.
So that's a really big deal. It was only shown twice in two different film festivals in 2002, and I feel like her work deserves to be shouted out more. So I, once again, really encourage you to go watch this. Trudy did a great job. It's so upsetting but wonderful because it's so wonderful to see what it could have been.
Yes.
And Eartha Kitt is a whole bright spot, which we will discuss later. I don't want to, like, get ahead of it. So first we want to go into kind of... what the overview of the story was supposed to be, which was, like we said, a Prince and the Pauper story.
Are you sure it wasn't the Emperor's
New
Clothes?
You need to stop talking now. Thank you. So I'm going to boot you off my Patreon episode. Okay? You are here because I allow it.
Okay. Yeah. So originally, the Prince's name, because he wasn't the Emperor yet.
He was not the Emperor
yet. It was
yet.
Contingent on his birthday. But the story changed so many times. He could have been the emperor the whole time. He could have never been the emperor.
It doesn't even matter, yeah.
So, his name was Manco.
Manco.
But they couldn't go with the name Manco.
Nope.
And we're not going to say it in the episode. But if you go on Google Translate and put Manco Japanese to English, you're going to find a word you're not expecting.
It was Japanese, and what was the other?
I looked up the Turkish one. It didn't come up.
So yeah, it's interesting. You have to go look it up yourself. We don't want to go into it, but David Spade does make a funny joke about it as well, if you want to go find that. But
yeah, there's curses in this.
There are. There's full up cursing and
stuff.
Another
reason why this would
not
be released by
Disney. And a lot of discontentment. Yeah, a lot of discontentment, which Disney would never show. So it was very interesting to see kind of the raw side of it.
Roy's in this.
Roy is in this. Poor thing. I love him. I know that people make fun of him a lot. I think he got a really rough end of the stick. I know he's a Disney, so how rough could it really be? But he was called the idiot nephew a lot. And I think that's an unfair criticism to somebody because how do you possibly compare to your uncle and your father who started this company? That's just so unfair. I'm sure people will have debate about that as well. But no, it does. It includes Roy Disney, a lot of execs. And there's some language in this that is not Disney friendly.
No.
At all. Like, I don't, and that explains why they don't want it being seen anywhere, because this is so unlike their brand.
This is not coming to Disney Plus anytime soon.
No, it is not. So with that idea in mind,
but we barely got into the story.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So David Spade was always contracted to play this main character, which
he wasn't the main character. Pacha was the main character, played by Kachow himself.
Well, I thought they split.
No.
Originally, so it was Pacha was the.
It's Pacha's story.
Okay.
Mango was the secondary character.
Mr. Kachow himself, Lightning McQueen, Owen Wilson, was supposed to play Pacha. And Pacha was supposed to be 16 years old and an exact replica of the king. We'll just call him
for Cusco. You know, the Prince and the
Pauper story. For the Prince and the Pauper story.
Not the other one.
Stop it. Oh my God. Stop it. Owen Wilson was contracted to play Pacha. There is clips of him and David Spade working off of each other, which is very interesting.
Yes.
And there was supposed to be a whole storyline where Owen Wilson's character falls in love with a girl who's in the palace. They had a beautiful song.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful song. Haunting. What if I said the second I heard, like, what was it, five notes? I'm like, this would have been a Disney hit.
Easy.
It was gorgeous. It gave me such Renaissance vibes with, like, a whole new world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hercules. Yeah. Like, that really, what would you say? Like, it's very...
It's romantic.
Mm-hmm.
It's romantic. It fit the vibe. If anything, if it was released at the same time as, you know, your Lion Kings and your Aladdins and how they took the romance song and put it in the credits, this would have been the credit song.
Absolutely.
100%.
No, it was. It's a shame that there were so many songs that Sting wrote that did not make it into this movie.
Mm-hmm. We're going to save one in particular.
Oh, I demand Disney to not be cowards and release, like,
some of these songs.
Some of the test tracks, because, oh my God, they're beautiful. But no, so sorry, I keep getting distracted because there's so many elements to this. But back to the story. So basically,
Yzma was always a character.
She was always a character. So basically, Owen Wilson and David Spade are the two... you know, princes, like the Prince and the Pauper.
Yeah.
And then there was Yzma. There was no Krunk.
No. Instead, there was a little idol
Little stone guy who was voiced by Harvey Firestein?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
The guy from Independence
Day. He talks like this.
That guy, yeah.
That guy. Like, he did some audio work for this, and it was crazy to see that, because I'm like, he's a big name too. So, like, that was interesting.
We know nothing about his character.
We know not. All we know is he was this little stone statue that's, like, 10,000 years old or something, and he...
There was a song that was a parody of,
Of My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
Why isn't a woman more like a man? And it was the stone basically saying, why aren't people more like stones? It was actually very funny.
And again, we're going to get to the music more later.
We'll get to the, but it goes with the story.
This is the only time we can ever mention this character.
Because the stone wasn't really talked about very much, even in the documentary. So it must have been scrapped pretty
early. It would have been a plushie.
Oh, yeah.
Easy.
Disney missed out on some marketing with that one.
Yeah.
So basically, Yzma was always... a character, but what's really disappointing, guys, is she was supposed to be a much bigger character than what we even saw. Eartha Kitt is a freaking icon and a legend, and we deserve to hear her tracks, and I think we should petition Disney for this, because she recorded so much for this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say there's at least like 70% that's never made it.
That's on the cutting room
floor. That's on the cutting room floor, just sitting there, if not more.
Well, because it's one of those things where not only was her character... it was cut from certain areas, her motivation was completely different. Like, originally in Empire of the Sun? No, that's a Spielberg movie.
No.
What is this? What's the title of this? Kingdom of the Sun. Empire of the Sun is a fantastic Spielberg movie.
Oh my God.
Has a young Christian Bale.
We're not talking about that right now.
But I'm just saying, man, I had to remember the title of the movie. But yeah, so she is envious that the sun and time has aged her and she's nothing but skin and bones. And so she's going to speak to demons and spirits to make it so they block out the sun and make her this beautiful
she
woman
wants
again.
To re basically Mother Gothel.
Yes.
And John did theorize this. I can't take credit. John theorized this while we were watching. He's like, oh, they pulled this for Tangled. Oh, they pulled this for another movie in the early 2000s. Like, we saw there were elements they definitely put another film.
We love this concept. Where can we use it?
And I will say, look, I love, you know, Tangled. I think it's great. I love Mother Gothel as a character. I love the voice actress of Mother Gothel as well. She's a big Broadway girly. So that's really cool. With all that being said, Eartha Kitt would have been better, in my opinion.
No doubt.
She really put it all on the floor, and she did an amazing job. So her whole concept and storyline was youth, and that got scrapped. But she still wanted to run the kingdom as well. That was still always there. She knew there was a fake prince on the throne. Correct. Because of the switch. So it's a whole storyline you never get the full picture of, unfortunately.
I read one review that there was like a tattoo that the prince was supposed to have.
Something like that. Which
he doesn't have the mark of the sun.
Well, and that's funny because in Barbie's Princess and the Pauper, the Barbie princess has a little crown birthmark on her shoulder, and the pauper doesn't. So I guess this is a reoccurring theme. I'm just saying. I guess that's in the original.
Is it not in the Emperor's New Clothes story, though?
You need to stop. I'm literally, this is your last chance. Okay. Anyway. So with all that in mind, that's kind of the general overview. It's the Prince and the Pauper story, or Princess and the Pauper, if you're a Barbie fan like me. If you don't know that story, go Google it.
You can stop watching this and watch Barbie, Princess and the Pauper.
I highly recommend. It's great. The songs are bangers.
It has outtakes. In the movie.
It's great. I'm sure all my girlies know, maybe some of the guys too. So now we're going to go into kind of the character work. So there is the David Spade character, who, like we already said, was, Manco, who then was later,
Cusco.
Cusco. I mean, it seems like David Spade always kept the character in a similar vein.
Mm-hmm.
He was always a vain guy who needed to change his ways. So that was kind of, that didn't change, I think, too drastically.
No.
More just the dialogue, correct. I'm sure.
They never had a completed script.
No. Sting was making all these songs and they were writing all this stuff with no actual clear outline. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to me that you had everyone doing all of this with no outline.
Yes.
Like, what?
Mm-hmm. The biggest deviation, of course, was Pacha.
Yes. Yes.
Who was the pauper in this tale. And there's... So when you're watching the documentary, it shows a lot of the creative team, and they're all titled, so you know who they are. Not this guy, though. Yeah. This was the Disney spiteful animator that was just like, I was working on Pacha, and he was originally this, like, Cusco twin, 16 years old. Now he's a 45-year-old farmer.
Yeah, he's like this guy who with big hands and, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, you could tell, like, he enjoyed working on the original interpretation of this.
He did get to work on Kronk, though, which I do think...
He enjoyed Kronk,
so I'm happy that he at least got that, which we'll go into that. So, David Spade's character, like we said, kind of became more the focal point, and Pacha became... I mean, he's still a focal point, but I would say a little more secondary.
They even said later on that, like, he is the grounding force.
Yes, he's, like, the grounding force of the film. So Pacha went from being Owen Wilson's character to everyone's favorite big blue monster, you know. We love,
Sully.
Yes.
I was just like,
he was just looking at me like, what are you talking about? It's John Goodman.
Well, yes, but you can't say Pacha turns into a blue monster.
Well, you realize it was right that he literally did that voice work at like the same time.
Yeah.
2000 release for that.
They must have grabbed him from one booth and just shoved him
in another. The poor guy. Did anyone like
check on him? Oh, really? The poor guy. Poor John Goodman making two Disney movies at the same time.
Back to back.
Oh my God. The grueling work.
No, but he did. And I have to say, I love John Goodman. His voice is just a warm, fuzzy hug. And I love Pacha. I love Pacha so much. So that's like not too upsetting for me, but I would have loved to see an Owen Wilson interpretation of Pacha. That's such an interesting... I mind you, the character was completely different, so we're just never going to see what that would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, how cool to think Lightning McQueen, years before Lightning McQueen was ever a thing. You know what I mean? Like,
would
he could have started
Disney
in
epic.
A Disney... Like, that's crazy to me. So that's really cool.
Like, that one early design of Pacha singing to a rising sun.
Oh, it was very Hercules.
You know they saw that they and were like, we're stealing this for Herc.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these movies are like years in advance of development. And so you can probably tell that they had like had similar concepts and shots and storyboards and that they kind of repurposed later on.
Mm-hmm.
Kronk is a great addition.
Kronk was a wonderful addition. I love the voice actor so much. What is his name?
Patrick Warburton.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. My brain tonight, guys. He is fabulous. And everyone like didn't know what Kronk was because he came in so late. Mm-hmm. Because a big part of this was...
The one guy said, he's like, this is Yzma's boyfriend.
Yzma's boyfriend. And I'm like, that is not accurate. But I mean, if it is... Good job, Yzma.
Right?
I mean,
way
dang.
To pull that.
But then in his own spinoff, Kronk got his own spinoff, we all know.
Yes.
He has a girlfriend.
It was a...
It was the other girl.
Junior Chipmunk.
Junior Chipmunk,
leader?
Yeah. I was going to say Girl Scouts. Yeah, it's Junior Chipmunk.
Yes, I know my
lore. You know
lore.
Your lore.
I do. I don't mess around.
Uh-huh. So basically, Kronk came in with almost no time at all because... They had to scrap and redo this whole movie in a year?
18 months.
Basically a year.
They had 18 months. That's a year and a half.
That's insane. They had to scrap every single thing they had been working on for years up to this point.
Yes.
Years they've been working on.
At least 3-4 years.
Easily 3-4 years. Scrap every single thing. Redo every single thing.
But why the time frame?
Oh, well, because, don't you know, they had a contract... With McDonald's.
Those toys
needed to come out, or Disney would have had to
pay
McDonald's money. Not money, anything but that. Mm-hmm. So they did. Disney said, well, screw everybody else. We're not paying McDonald's money. You got to work harder. So they literally scrapped every single concept. And Sting, at this point in the documentary, was done. You could tell. The poor man was so disheartened.
One of the best jokes of the whole thing was like, oh, maybe they'll call me to say that they're firing me.
Yeah, he's like, maybe they'll call me to say that they're firing me. And I'm like, oh, Sting, I'm so sorry. Sting was not fired. They kept him on to the very end.
Because of the documentary.
Because of the documentary. Yeah, so it was a whole, he just had to keep powering through, unfortunately.
Because he already, the time that he allotted... For
was
this,
already surpassed.
Was already surpassed. He was working on a new album.
He was on tour.
And he's just like, I have to go back to this thing. Yep. I don't even have passion for this
and
anymore.
They contracted him at the end. They said they wanted the beginning song, the credit song, and the ending song. So they only wanted 3 songs.
Yeah. He already made 5.
He already had made 5. Those were all scrapped, never seen the light of day. And he had to make another 3 for them. So... Really fun for him. And you do hear those songs did make the final cut. So mm-hmm. those are in there. But what was really kind of funny was he got really upset at the end because of the original end of the story. Once they had the whole thing settled out of exactly what they wanted to do. So it is the storyline we all know and the characters we all know and what's made it this far. At the end, though, Cuscotopia was going to be built on the rainforest, like they were going to strip rainforest.
Not just
land.
Like a little thing. It
a
was
ginormous.
The full theme
it was.
Park.
It's a Disney theme park.
Yes.
They were going to make Cuscotopia, this ginormous thing in the middle of the rainforest, destroying all this land. Cusco did not learn his lesson at all.
Sting wrote a strongly worded letter. This is where we finally meet Roy in the story.
Yes,
he's not until the very end.
To the very end, because this was, I think he was probably doing partially for publicity to make sure it's like, hey, we're aware of this. But then it never really got released anyway, so it didn't matter. But yeah, he did not really come into play until this part because they had this big board meeting that Sting wasn't even there for because he's on tour or doing whatever. And Thomas Schumacher said, oh, well, we should read this letter from Sting. And Sting, he reads it out loud in the documentary, at least part of it, not the whole thing. But basically being like the fact that, you know, he has stood up
this
for...
This stands against my beliefs.
My beliefs. He's like, I've stood up for, you know, conservation of the rainforest and things of this nature. Mm. And he doesn't even learn his lesson. He destroys things at the end for his own personal gain. What is this? And he said, I do not feel comfortable being attached to this.
Yeah.
And so they read it out loud and they went, oh, he's right.
That's
okay.
A really good note.
That's a good note. And I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. It's a little tone deaf. It's a little tone deaf. But they do scrap it to now the ending where he's in a little shack, like a little, you know, he's in a little cottage.
No, my favorite thing was, I can't remember who the guy was too, but they're in the wrap-up section. And I don't know why this guy took a massive hit piece. He was just like, I don't like Podge's family. It's just sobs.
Oh my gosh, that was like, yeah, one of the ending notes was Pacha's wife, Chi-Chi, is that her
name? Something, like it's like Pacha and like...
I'm going to look it up, hold on. You think we would have checked this before we started talking, but you know. I see Chaka, but what is her name?
It's like...
Hold on. So they were talking about Potch's family. I had to look up, guys. We had to take 2 seconds because I had to find her name. It is, it's Chicha?
Chicha.
I think it's Chicha. It's the wife, okay? It's the wife. And
pregnant lady with a baby coming through.
Pregnant lady with a baby coming through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I love her. She's right. Great. Yeah. She's great. No, so she was scrapped and then added back in and then scrapped again and then added back in again. They could not decide what they wanted to do with her.
Yeah. It was a lot of back and forth. He's like, you know, the family just drags everything. He's like, no, you need the family.
Yeah,
like,
that was a huge talking point was why do we need the family in the end of the story? It's like, because the whole point is that love and family, like triumph. What do you mean?
Yeah. I just thought that was like, to me, it's at the very end.
Yeah.
But it really does just go to show how little everyone was on the same page.
Mind you, these are the same people that, like, said Part of Your World slowed the movie down. Mm-hmm. That cut out Pocahontas' love song with John Smith. Like, yeah. They are not right about these things so much of the time. And it's amazing to me how tone deaf they can be about this. Because, like, the whole point is, like, they gave Cusco a family. Mm-hmm. And it shows, like, Pacha's love for his family. Yeah. And, like, the importance of family and the importance of love in your life and things like that. So the fact they did not see the point of that, I'm like, what?
But, you know, you realize you're missing out on a major factor of the ending.
Mm.
I can't believe we haven't talked about it.
What?
When you see him and he pops out and says, boom, baby, he's wearing new clothes.
Oh my God, I'm not doing this with you.
He's wearing new clothes. It's his new clothes. They found them. He's green now. Fits the general aesthetic. Very earthy, see? With the water slide still. Wait, does he have the water slide?
No, the bird has a water slide. He gets a baby's water slide. Yeah.
Yes.
Because they go down to the lake together.
They go down to the lake.
It's not like this crazy,
elaborate Disney world.
No, it's not. It's not.
So we should probably get into like the rest of the songs now.
You can start with that because I know you have a lot of feelings.
The Eartha Kitt songs. We
wanted to hold off.
We buried the lead on the Eartha Kitt songs.
Eartha Kitt, yeah.
They're the best thing in the show.
Entirely.
Like, you know, her first song was very reminiscent to like Ursula Lounge, big epic with monsters incorporated into it.
Absolutely.
It's very much kind of like Poor Unfortunate Souls meets Friends on the Other Side is what I really got from it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And I remember, you know, Melinda was in the other room when it was first playing. I was like, get over here!
Yeah.
Quickly! You need to listen to this!
Yeah, no, she's
you know fabulous. That new song they were talking about?
Oh my
You God. Should listen to this! That was May. And then in the song A Perfect World, that's sung by Tom Jones. I didn't know that was a Tom Jones.
Oh yeah, that's been a known thing. Yeah, that's
I didn't Jones. Realize. I just always knew he was theme song.
So well, I didn't know it was Emperor's New Clothes and you didn't know it was Tom Jones.
Not knowing a vocalist and not knowing a famous fairy tale.
I know the fairy tale. I just didn't put it together. Okay. Yeah, it's so, fine. We're moving on.
So in the song Perfect World, she had a whole reprise.
She did. It was a Yzma reprise of the song, and it was literally them singing about Yzma being the ruler, and it was deliciously evil, and she was chewing it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just perfect. Where's that, Disney?
Yeah.
Where's the song?
Like, I dare you to anniversary, drop these deleted songs.
Ugh, guys, it's honestly, it's a travesty. It's so sad. Like, the songs were all great, and like I said, I love the love song that they got. It sounded beautiful. I really think it had
the llama, the potential. Llama song.
The llama song sounded funny. I think we would have enjoyed it. It's a little silly, but that's
just... I think to rhyme, they said llama.
Yeah, they said like llama, llama. It kind of gave me vibes of like, not gonna lie, Wish a little bit with like the forest song a little bit. But like better.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? It was that cheesy Disney song.
Yeah.
Which is fine in like small amounts.
Oh my gosh. Earlier on, again, they did show names. So if you did watch this, you'd probably mark on the guy's name. My favorite little side comment, just to show how different Disney has changed from, you know, this came out in 2002 to where we're at now. Oh, you know, I really love working with Sting, but the intricacy of his lyrics, I don't know if we can keep up with that. Meanwhile... this man's mind would be blown.
Lin-Manuel Miranda enters the chat.
Yeah, right?
It's kind of crazy that they were so concerned because honestly, Sting's lyrics, I mean, mind you, they were beautiful, Lin's are like insanely intricate with how quickly it moves. I dare everyone to go listen to Encanto and try to keep, or Encanto, sorry, and try to keep up with the lyrics in the first song.
Heck, the Maui rap.
The Maui rap even can get a little tongue-tied for people. I dare you. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, they were afraid of Sting.
Sting.
Sting was...
Hey, Sting's great.
Sting's great. No, honestly, I have a newfound appreciation for Sting. Very much so. I already liked Sting, don't get me wrong, but now I'm like, man, I feel bad. I feel really bad. He got screwed.
So... now that we understand what could have been the overall impressions and the frustration of this team, this staff, the creative element.
The easily almost 5 years put into this.
Yes. I think like that we should end this with an overall impression of the Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah, I don't even... Okay.
With this knowledge now.
Yeah, that's what makes it difficult is now I have knowledge that this film could have been a completely different film in so many ways. And I understand that storyboarding, most of these stories start out as something else. Like Wish had the star. It was an actual like star boy. Mm-hmm. Like there's, you know what I mean? So I understand that stories go through iterations. I don't think all the iterations this went through were for the better. Not even close. I think they really did Eartha Kitt dirty. Entirely. Mm. She deserves better. I love Patrick Warburton,
The fact that it's still an icon, though.
Oh, yeah, because she chews up the scenery, man. Yes. She every scene she's in is iconic and perfect. There's no denying it. And if you have a problem with her, we need to have a conversation.
But, like, if it was the original version, and again, I know we're talking about Emperor's New Groove now, but if it was the original version with these songs...
we would have loved her even more.
She would be in contention with one of the best Disney villains.
Which I still think she is probably some people's favorite. Absolutely.
She'd be ranked higher.
But she would be ranked higher. They really did her dirty with this. And you could tell she
the animator was so sad.
Yeah, there was an animator who was really dedicated to the Yzma character who was very disheartened by how much they killed her character. And once again, I get it. It's they had to dumb it down, it seems like. That's what Eartha Kitt basically said in the documentary. They dumbed down the character for
simplicity.
So
people can understand what she's up to.
Which,
more.
I'm sorry, we knew what she was up to from day one because she was Bane and wanted to rule a kingdom. It was pretty simple. And it stays that way. That's the thing. Like, in Emperor's New Groove, she's still vain. But just not to the extent that they talk about in this first iteration.
I'm going to coin a new phrase right now.
What is that?
I'm going to coin this right now.
Okay.
The fact that this whole dumbed down and, you know, modern Disney and all this stuff. Yeah. We're going to call this the Frollo factor.
The Frollo factor?
If they can get Frollo. If they can understand the intricacies and depth of Frollo.
They could deal with this.
Disney has understood and crossed the Frollo factor.
You know what? That's accurate. Yeah, that's... yeah.
I want to coin that. We're going to put that on
Frollo
the shirt.
Frollo factor.
The Frollo factor.
Hashtag Frollo factor.
Hashtag Frollo factor.
Yeah, no, it's honestly, I think the movie suffers from that early 2000s kind of cringe a little bit. I think it was the beginning of the end. It was definitely, I mean, it was already starting.
If it's not the end of the Renaissance,
it's
the end of the Renaissance.
It's the end of the Renaissance. It's right after Emperor's New Groove is when you
I'm
got
Googling
all the...
I'm Googling this now, when the actual cutoff.
It's after this is we got no good films for a couple years.
The cow one. I'll still never watch the cow one.
I refuse.
I've watched all the Disney movies. I purposely go out of my way not to watch the cow one.
I feel like Emperor's New Groove, knowing what I know now, it's good for what it is, but man, that original story would have been so beautiful, and I'm very sad we never got to see it, and I hope some executive somehow is listening to our Patreon and, wants to change that, because, man, even if it's just the songs, I just want the songs. Give me a soundtrack.
Yeah.
Just give me the soundtrack. You could do it. You have the rock recordings somewhere still.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a vault somewhere. Just pull them out.
All right. I'm looking at this. It seems like the Disney Renaissance cuts off with Tarzan.
That makes sense.
Looks like Tarzan. Maybe you can put Fantasia 2000.
What about Rescuers Down
Under?
Well,
that was 1990. It started.
Why did I think that was later?
No. It goes Little Mermaid.
I know. I know it starts with Merm.
Exactly.
I just thought that the movie was later. That was on me. So they're really, it's the start of the end, basically.
Yeah.
Or I'd say, honestly, Pocahontas was the start of the end. That's when, or even Hercules. That's when it started to get a little rough.
What is it with that little era of Disney movies? You think about it, Emperor's New Groove, Hercules. They had this like fascination with
the boxy,
not even boxy
angle style.
They loved like this Vegas feel.
They do talk about Vegas in this multiple times. They really wanted this Vegas look. I don't know why they were so insistent on this kind of Vegas showgirl type of thing. I don't know what made them, what compelled them to think that was the right move.
Big, grand, flashy.
Big, grand, flashy. And I get that, like, Disney is big, grand, flashy, but it doesn't really make a lot of sense. And they do. They say with both Hercules and this, like, they wanted the Vegas.
Yeah, they're like, oh, look, we should give a Vegas vibe for this. I'm like, why?
I don't know. We're getting sidetracked, though.
But no, but anyway, in my opinion, I, you know, as a kid, I enjoyed Emperor's New Groove. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
The talking llama, you know, Earth the Kit. Kronk is a classic and needs to be protected. Yeah, he needs to be protected at all stance.
Him and Yuzma are the MVPs.
You know, just like the pull the lever, Kronk, wrong lever. Like, all that stuff, fantastic. So it's one of those things that's just like, do I wish we got the movie that they originally made? Yes.
Yeah. Can you appreciate what exists?
I can appreciate what exists.
Yeah. And I guess to wrap this, like, we just wanted to celebrate the movie being out for so long.
Yes.
Because it is a cult classic. And I think it has really gained quite a following over the years. But like I said, it's very contentious. People either seem to love this film or hate this film. So,
but no matter what, we have to appreciate the plight of the
plight
team,
of these people,
the staff.
And really... maybe go watch it, guys, and just and watch the Sweatbox. Like I said, I'll link it. I'll try my best to link it for this Patreon episode so you can go watch. But maybe if you really are interested, go give this a watch and just listen to what these people went through and give us your thoughts.
Like,
about...
don't imagine this to be a total hit piece. It's not.
It's not. It's not a hit piece. It really is not.
Well, the opening title credit.
Well, yeah, a little bit. But like,
man, she goes swinging.
But I will say, for the most part, it's very tame. But it is critical of Disney. And you know what? I think Disney needs some critical analysis sometimes. I think Disney gets a little complacent.
It's great watching it knowing Disney of now.
Yes.
Because right now we are
this
in
this is
that,
very relevant
era
right now.
Where we're coming out of this next big thing and they're starting to wane.
Guys,
again.
Disney has always done this trend where it has a huge hit of movies and then it slumps and it always comes back. And it's funny because I've had people saying to me recently, even your parents recently said this to me, they're like, oh, Disney's really fallen off. And I'm like, no, this is what they do.
Yeah.
This is always what they've done. They have some big hits. Go look at the decades and you'll literally see this repeating trend of super highs crashing to the ground, almost closed. Super highs crashing again to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what's happening. Just like it did when, you know, Snow White came out, they had a bit of a high, crashed down in the 40s, then came back with Cinderella in the 50s up into, you know, Sleeping Beauty, 60s, it starts to taper off. 70s is really not great. 80s, they're at the bottom of the bottom at that point. And then comes back up again in the 90s with all these stellar hits that we all know and love.
Yes.
And then once again, crashes in the early 2000s. And then Princess and the Frog, that's when it started to trail back upwards. And Tangled really kicked that off. And then Frozen, of course, made everything explode.
Yeah.
So the same thing is happening. So I do have faith in this company that they will come back in their full Disney glory and we will get more beautiful films. But I will say this is relevant to what we're seeing, I think, right now with
right
a lot
now.
of repeating concepts and these live action remakes. And I know people out there are disheartened by it. And I think this might give a little context.
An introspection.
An introspection about, yeah, exactly, about how Disney works. And
these are people that work on this.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't like a, you know, it's on all machines and all this stuff. They're people. They're hardworking people.
And you can tell there's so much love.
But at the same time, over-management, overthinking things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just like, you have your story, just run
just
with
run
it.
Just run with the story.
And it's one of those things, I highly recommend that you watch this documentary.
Absolutely.
Highly recommend it. And thank you guys, again, so much for having me. Yeah. I had so much fun with this.
Aw, I'm so glad you could be here.
Yeah.
That's so fun. I love when I get to do so with my husband. So
yeah, I hope that we can do more of this.
I hope so, too. Maybe some more crazy documentaries will get released on YouTube.
Yeah, crazy documentaries, or if you want more movie reviews and analysis.
Yeah.
It could be older movies. It could be brand new movies, remakes.
Oh, we love talking films, guys. This is actually, I don't get to talk often on the podcast about how much John and I really love film, but we used to when we were younger.
Yeah.
Now we're old, don't you know? When we were younger, we went to the movies all the time and we'd sit and we'd break down films and what we love and didn't love about them. We were big Nostalgia Critic fans, if anyone knows Nostalgia Critic.
He's still around.
He's still around. it's just he had his era like Disney had its eras. Yeah. So, but no, this has been so fun and we hope you enjoy it. And please leave your thoughts about Emperor's New Groove down below and, you know, your favorite characters from the film, what you wish you could change about it. If you watch the documentary, please let's start a conversation about it. I'll probably post something about, you know, about this in Discord as well, because I think it should be talked about. There needs to be more attention put on this.
Agreed.
And I'm really glad we have a copy of it in case YouTube catches on and scrubs it from
apparently the internet. It comes up and down a lot.
Yeah, Disney's really on top of it. So anyway, all right, I think we're good. I think we did it. And I hope this was cohesive. All right, talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.